toward the, I know for a lot of people, it every day feels like a long weekend, but it is a long weekend coming up. Friday, Good Friday, and the Easter weekend is straight ahead. And that is NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman speaking yesterday to Mike Tirico on the NBC Sports Network, Pierre Maguire's network, talking about, well, where he's at in terms of a return to play. Everything's on the table. Likely no decisions until end of April, early May. But again, I think for the first time we heard from an NHL higher up, Gary Bettman being as high as they go, about the talking about regular season hockey, not the playoffs, but regular season hockey. Said it may not be possible that we get regular season games in all of the rest of them.
Yeah, and lots of levels to cart back. All 31 teams play a month of fairly meaningless hockey, also to try to charge fans, get people to come. So no, I think if you want to grab interest, grab the market, grab North America, you come up with a playoff. And as far as where it'll be played and how it'll be played, I think that's probably what they're trying to look at, of all things, and no positive to it. Interestingly enough, that the three California teams and the three New York Metro teams are not in the playoffs this year. Those are two of the bigger hotspots, and obviously two of, if not the biggest populations in the United States.
Thoughts on what the commissioner had to say and everything around the world of hockey. We welcome to the show, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time, NBC Sports Network's Pierre Maguire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm well. Good morning to you, JR. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre. Sean.
I was going to say Matthew because I talked to him, but I talked to him before I come on. But good morning, Sean.
There
morning.
You go. What did you think just overall of what the commissioner had to say yesterday?
Well, everything's fluid, just what he was saying. I totally agree with everything he said, as a matter of fact. I mean, the truth of the matter is nobody knows. You've got fluctuations going on in a lot of different marketplaces. Some days it's good, some days it's not so good. Over 700 people died in New York yesterday. So, there's one where they say, well, the curve's going down. Yeah, the curve's going down, but 700 people died in a day. So, you know, it's really hard to play Nostradamus with this thing and say, yeah, this is exactly when we're going to come back and this is exactly how it's going to play out, because nobody really knows. And one of the things that's becoming apparent, the virus is starting to shift into different parts of the country, which I don't think they were expecting. Albany, Georgia now has become a huge hotspot, which I don't think anybody was expecting. So that's part of the issue, too, is just how mobile this virus has become in a short period of time, even though everybody's practicing quote-unquote social distancing.
For the league office itself, Pierre, this obviously they're living it, right? I mean, the offices are in Manhattan. They're New York people. So it's not like you got something that's located out in the Midwest and no real touch. Like, hey, for Gary Bettman and his entire staff, they're seeing this front and center.
Well, especially Commissioner Bettman and Bill Daly, they both commute from New Jersey, northern New Jersey, into Manhattan, I would imagine, most of the time. And so part of what's gone on now, and this is something that's not getting a lot of play, the state of New Jersey has basically been shut down for 30 days. And so small businesses are closed. It's just schools are closed. It's not as easy as everybody's thinking. And I said this yesterday on Mitch Melnick's show in Montreal. What people don't realize is good portions of the season ticket holders, whether it's for the Islanders, especially when they're with their move to Brooklyn, with the Rangers and with the Devils, a lot of those ticket holders come from the state of New Jersey. They come from Essex County. They come from Monmouth County. They come from Passaic County. They come from Bergen County. And Bergen County in particular has been hit amazingly hard. And that's where a lot of the wealth in northern New Jersey comes from, for people that are the season ticket holders and just buying the $350 to $400 tickets at Madison Square Garden. So, again, that's something I'm sure they're thinking about as we go along here.
Simmer has raised the concept of if there is a return to play, whether it be regular season games or right into the playoffs, you talked about the economic hit that's hit the average fan, the corporations for sure, but the average fan even more so, and the reliance on the gate tickets to games being huge with the National Hockey League. Would you look at either discounted tickets or even free tickets just to get if fans are allowed in the stands? That's a huge part of it, obviously. But is that option on the table, do you think?
I don't know. And it's tough for me to say. I thought about giving a thank you to the fans for staying loyal when they come back, and they will come back at some point. But saying here's 50% off on a ticket, I brought that up a couple weeks ago. Just think, again, no inside knowledge. Nobody's told me that. That's just out of my own mind. But I know that people around the league don't like to discount tickets. They don't like to give away free tickets. They don't like setting that precedent. I completely understand their business model. Sean knows it. I know we've had to put budgets together, and a good portion of revenue that comes into the league is not so much from TV money. It's from gate receipts. It's real fannies in the seats. And, you know, most of the owners, it's a break-even proposition until you get to the playoffs. And then the playoffs becomes a whole different entity for the ownership groups of these teams.
Based on the way Jeremy Jacobs runs the Boston Bruins, is that a tone, as he's the most powerful man of the ownership group, that sets the tone for the rest of the National Hockey League?
I don't know if it's fair to say that, because there are other owners that are not nearly as famous, and he owns an Original Six team. I would say you could probably talk about that back in the day when Mr. Jacobs and Mr. Schneider in Philadelphia were very, very large voices in the league, but there have been a lot of accomplished people that have come into the league that do have significant voice when it comes to swaying opinion with the board of governors and with the legal, you know, management, whether it be Commissioner Bettman or Bill Daly. So just to say that it's all on Mr. Jacobs, I think, would be unfair, Sean.
Who are some of the kind of those new voices that you're referring to?
Craig Leopold in Minnesota is a very large voice. Mr. Anschutz and his group out in Los Angeles have a pretty significant voice. Dr. Samueli and his family in Anaheim. The people in San Jose, I think Mr. Vinnick down in Tampa has a pretty significant voice. Mr. Dolan in New York, you know, he controls a very large franchise in a major metropolis. So those are some of the people. Some of them are new, some of them aren't. But Mr. Leopold has been somebody that I know has been counted on a lot when it comes to collective bargaining and a lot of the other things around the league.
Hey, economics are economics. A lot of these wealthy owners are taking major hits. Would we be shocked? And I won't say NHL, but professional sports. We'll see some franchises for sale after this.
You know, I've been asked that question before, Sean. I just don't know the answer to it. I don't know what the bank's appetite is to loan money to sports teams at this point. It's beyond me. I just don't know. I'm watching what's going on around me. Just in our small little town, we have over 100 people that are infected, and we've got 10 people that are dead. So it's just, that's something that I haven't even thought about. But, you know, again, I think a lot of it comes, just to put it in perspective, I think a lot of it comes down to what do the banks have in terms of an appetite to loan money to professional sports teams. I just don't know the answer.
All right. Well, we contemplate a return to play at some point. The business of the game continues. The Toronto Maple Leafs announced yesterday that they have signed KHLer Alexander Barabanov to a one-year deal. He's 25 years old, a winger. Mm-hmm. Who had a better year 2 years ago than last year, but has got a little bit of offensive touch. You saw him play at the Olympics.
He
played for Russia and the gold medal winning team in 2018. What do you know of this player and what he might bring to the NHL?
He's an offensive guy. I don't know how much he's going to bring to the NHL. Obviously, he's a bit older. He's got some veteran experience. He's developed physically. He's not overly large, but he can score points. I mean, that's the one thing. He can score points, and that's something I'm sure Toronto's looking to do, is to add some people in their organization that can score. He didn't score a lot in the Olympics when I was there, but again, he stood out. He's strong with the puck. He's strong on the puck, and he has very good peripheral vision and can make plays. So that's how I would view him.
He's, what, an 11 to 15 goal scorer in the KHL, and numbers really aren't that great, Pierre.
Yeah.
To this, are we seeing a trend away from where I'd say 8 years ago the only players playing in the NHL were the high-end skilled players? Go back to the New Jersey teams back in the day, and they'd have some lower end. Is this a trend where teams will bring guys in to play in the bottom six now, and also a sign that the Russian players, even the role players, want to come back to North America?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're raising a really good point. Absolutely. I think people are also looking for more and more mature physical players. Not so much that they're physical and bound people into the glass like Mike Peluso used to do, or Randy McKay used to do, or Bobby Hulik used to do. You talk about New Jersey with the crash line.
And I was thinking of Sergei Breland, actually.
Yeah, well, Sergei was a draft pick, though, and he was a guy that was really hockey strong, and they really appreciated his hockey sense. I know Jacques Lemaire thought the world of Sergei Breland, and his teammates did as well, and I believe Sergei's still working for the Devils in terms of skill development. I get your point on that, too. But, no, I think they're looking for guys that are hockey strong, that are a little bit more mature, and won't be intimidated playing in big moments. And, you know, obviously, Barabanov played in the Olympics, even though he didn't have a great Olympics. He stood out. You noticed him at the Olympics. You definitely noticed him.
In relation to Mikheyev, who, you know, the soup man, who had a great start to Toronto, unfortunately ended up getting that cut wrist and missed the second half of the season. But he was a right off the radar player who was looked really good. Do you have is Barabanov a better player? Not as good? Are they the same?
No, they're different. Yeah. Barabanov's stronger on the puck, and I think he makes, you know, really solid professional plays. Mikheyev is just a tremendous skater. He's got really good range, and so what really stands out is it's explosive ability to make plays. I don't think Barabanov has that.
Hmm. And free players are free players, Pierre, but especially in the case of Toronto up against the salary cap, are we just going to see flat out more and more of these guys on entry-level contracts rotating into the lineup just so they can actually get 18 skaters on the ice?
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. I totally agree with you on that, John. And one of the things is we're going to see younger and younger guys coming into the league too because they don't make as much, and the cap is going down. There's no way around it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. The cap is going down. There's going to be a lot of juggling going on. I don't know whether they have to make some internal arrangements in the league, but this is going to be very, very interesting to watch how this whole plays out with the salary cap and the players that are signed and the players that potentially could be unrestricted free agents and the players like Barabanov who are coming over from Europe. This is an interesting time in the league to be a manager for sure.
Well, the NHL playoffs were supposed to start tonight, believe it or not. It was 4 weeks ago today to the day that the Ottawa Senators and the LA Kings played what was the last game for now of the season. DJ Smith is going to be the first Ottawa Senator, not play. They've had some players interviewed, but the first management/coaching person. He's going to talk a little later on today, have a meet up with the local media in terms of a conference call. And then be on the station as well. Going forward, the Sens next year, if they graduate some players from Belleville, maybe one or both of the top picks end up making the team. How much do you think that DJ Smith needs to or has to change in terms of his coaching philosophy going from a team that isn't skill-laden to maybe will have a lot more skill coming sooner rather than later?
I actually like what Ottawa did this year. I thought they competed hard. You know, at the beginning of the year, they definitely needed to fix their in-zone coverage. I think everybody knew that. And eventually it got better as the season went along. Obviously, they didn't have a lot of assets. But I loved what Jack Capuano and Davis Payne did with the team. I thought the goaltending was solid. Pierre Grew did a good job with their goaltenders. But the one thing I'd say is that, you know, I don't think they need to change much. I just think the biggest thing is get out of the gate, quickly. Don't sit back and struggle. You can't fall behind early. When you have a young team, you want to make sure that the message is received properly early on and the team's ready to, you know, play with some confidence as you go along. But I kind of liked what they did as a coaching staff, to be honest with you. They didn't have a lot to work with this year.
From the year in Belleville to where they finished, to San Jose finishing, to the end of a regular season possibly, to a downturn in the salary cap and having 3,000 picks in this year's draft, could this have been a better year for the Ottawa Senators? Into the crystal ball from 2 years from now, like they have to be, if they did this properly now, even more so, in one of the best positions in the entire National Hockey League.
I would totally agree with that. I think the Los Angeles Kings are another team that's very similar to that, where they've got a lot of prospects that people aren't talking about. I think Tampa's another one. Even though they've got a real good team, they've got, you know, a plethora of prospects. The New York Rangers. If you're going to talk about, you know, this kind of a terrible situation that's happened to everybody in society, not just the NHL, is there a silver lining for some teams more than others? Absolutely. Is Ottawa one of them? Yeah, they might be right at the top for sure.
We have heard, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to look at the prospects, that maybe just one or two of them, certainly Lafreniere, maybe the German kid Stützle, might be the only two players.
Byfield.
You think Byfield can play in the NHL next season?
He's got the size and the skating ability. Now it just comes down to whether he can make a team or not.
Right. Would it be in his best interest necessarily to play in the NHL?
No, it would not, but it goes back to Sean's point, which I think is a really relevant point, especially going into next year, JR, with the way the cap potentially could be. I think there's going to be an appetite to maybe put some younger players into situations, even though it's not always appropriate to do that. It might be just teams have to do that. If they want to keep a superstar, they may have to let a lesser light go and bring in a younger player. We'll see how it all plays out. Obviously, we don't know what the cap's going to be next year.
Right.
I was going to say, looking at Ottawa sitting in those picks, when you mentioned Tampa Bay, I go over every restricted free agent. And you look at a guy like Cirelli, and if the thing comes down, there is no chance that the Tampa Bay Lightning, he would go into the office right now and say, I'm not taking a dollar less than Colin White. I'm actually a better player.
No, but everything you're saying is right, and that's why I talk about Tampa. People don't realize 3 years ago, nobody even knew who Anthony Cirelli was. Unless you were his father or part of the Anthony Cirelli family group, you didn't know who he was. But again, there are a lot of players that are like that out there that don't get nearly enough acclaim, and all of a sudden they get into the league, and then they turn out to be really, really good players because they don't get the pomp and circumstance that a lot of the first and second rounders get.
Boy, the Ottawa Senators could be in a real position. You know, we talk about the cap coming down and teams facing a cap crunch. They could be in a real power position as far
totally
as
agree.
Being
totally,
able to.
Yeah, we've been talking, not to say anything, but we've been talking about this for a while now. Sean's been talking about it, I've been talking about it, you've been talking about it. I mean, hopefully the listeners are really excited about their group. I understand there were some pain and trials and tribulations this year, but the long term, I think New York Rangers and Ottawa are two teams that are really poised to surge, where, you know, they might not be, they are not playoff teams right now. But if you look at it long term, they could be very dominant teams.
Be a fun exercise, and maybe, well, we're looking for stuff to kind of get us through each show. Fun exercise to go through some of these teams that are in a cap crunch, I should say, like the Lightnings and the Toronto Maple Leafs of the world, and look at players they may not be able to keep just based on the new world we're going to be living in.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Sean's point about Cirelli is a good one because there are going to be players like that. You can go look at the list of all these teams that have RFAs, and there are going to be guys that are going to be like that. It comes down to your professional scouting and how they read players, because there will be some guys that will be available that you'll say, wow, that guy's actually really good.
Yeah. Speaking of really good players, before we wrap, a couple of questions for you to wrap up. Victor Arvidsson celebrating a birthday today. Wow. We kind of went through. He had a real down year this year production-wise, and I know he had some injuries, but only 15 goals in 57 games, I think it was. He's coming off a couple of 30-goal seasons, including 34 last year. Yeah. His shooting percentage last year, Pierre, was kind of off the charts. He was regressed to a normal shooting percentage this year. So his shot total was way down. What did you see in his game when he was playing that he wasn't quite as effective a player as he had been in years past?
Part of it was the center iceman that he played with most of the year. Ryan Johansson wasn't as good. They were trying to figure out who was better to play with him, Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson. Philip Forsberg had a down year. Usually that was a line, Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. They weren't able to get any kind of real mojo or traction going the entire year. I did a lot of Nashville games. But the cross-check from Robert Bortuzzo, I don't think he was ever right after that, even though he came back and played. I mean, and Robert's a friend of mine, and I think a very, you know, useful player, but that was nasty. That was really nasty, and I think that set that player back a long way.
Would you say that Arvidsson's contract is maybe the best value contract in the NHL at $4.25 million for four more seasons?
Yeah, it's up there as long as he can get back to being the productive player that he was the previous 2 years, and I think he can be. He's got an amazing nose for the net, and he's fearless. The problem is there's a little bit of the Brendan Gallagher syndrome. He's not overly large. So at some point, when those players lose a gear or half a gear, their hands start to go. They're not nearly as effective, but I can't think that will be a problem for him.
We had a fun discussion about draft timing, and I said, it'd be nice to get the draft lottery, do a little June draft. And I was thinking, just again, as we have this conversation from an Ottawa perspective, would you agree that Dorion and JR said wait till after the playoffs end? If you're Dorion sitting on all those picks, I'm assuming you want a draft at the conclusion of the season, because the restricted free agents would be moved for the actual draft picks versus necessarily picks you took, right? Like, team always wants to pick their own player, to my
Absolutely.
Point.
And I got to let you go. On that question, great point, and it's got a lot of merit. Let's talk about it tomorrow.
Will do. Thanks, Pierre.
Take care.
Back 8:36 on this midweek Wednesday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer. Glad you're along. Thanks again to Pierre McGuire for joining us. starting to come around a little bit, Simmer, on how crazy your idea was of having, if NHL playoffs happened in the summer, still have the draft in June to create the buzz going?
Never crazy, and it's always healthy discussion. That's the ability to have that. Here's what I'll tell you. The NHL won't look at the Ottawa Senators or anyone else or care less. They'll look and say, hey, does it make sense to move forward? But from an Ottawa perspective, and after having that conversation with Pierre, and use Cirelli as an example, hey, do you want the Islanders' first-round pick and you sign them to a contract extension? Do you think DJ Smith would like that? I would think Ottawa, you'd certainly want to have the draft after the playoffs, but I wouldn't rule out that it happens before for the National Hockey League. But, hey, again, these are all the discussions because we've never gone through this. You know, same thing in 04, 05 as to how to handle that. That was just different because you could not have a draft because you didn't have a CBA.
It's just, you know, and these discussions might have to happen and decisions come very quickly. The cap implications in the National Hockey League, if the numbers come down, and let's we're using 25%, so going from just over 80 to let's say 60.
Yeah.
Again, a whole host of teams already have more than $60 million committed to next season. I have to think that the pressure on the National Hockey League and the PA by extension is going to be enormous to have something that is going to allow a lot of these teams to be able to keep their players. Like, it's not going to be a total, hey, Tampa Bay's out of money, man. Everybody who's a restricted free agent is walking out the door because we can't pay them a contract of $700,000 if we wanted, let alone what they might be valued at. Because, the teams like the Ottawa Senators that are sitting at, I think their commitment level is $40 million, right? They'd be circling like vultures right now with the opportunity to snap up some pretty good players. I would think they're going to find some way, and I don't know how it is, to spread a lower cap number, I would think, over a few seasons.
Well, and again, last time we saw a rollback in salaries, well, it is no different. If you're a $4 million hockey player and 25% of the salary cap's gone, well, in escrow, you're losing $1 million anyway, so you might as well do that budget for teams before and say, hey, it's not going to go to you. It's not like the players, oh my gosh, you're stealing money from me. You're not going to get paid the money. So that would be a simple formula, but all this, and the draft's not that hard to do after the playoffs wrap up. The next part would be if you wrap up a playoff end of September and decide to start November 1st, the free agency market and the turnaround of that and how that'll be handled too, right? Like imagine, hey, just won the Stanley Cup here. Mr. Krug, you're off to wherever in free agency.
Yep.
Although
we do see that now. I mean, the season typically ends
But you don't have to play right away, I guess, more. But you're right. You're we've seen expansion in the – I'm trying to remember who was with Detroit back in the day. I think they had to tell him at the Stanley Cup parade that he had been taken in expansion. So, hey, just the logistics, the handling, but that would be my guesstimate. You just say, hey, you're only making 75% of your salary. Then to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have all those crazy signing bonuses come July 1st, I'm wondering, because that was supposed to be lockout proof. I don't think it was, coronavirus proof. As to how they're going to pay that out and how that's going to be handled would be interesting as well.
We have heard about that CBAs, and I'm sure the NHL's CBA is no different than any other major sports. This Eric Macromella has brought up this force majeure, which is things that are acts of God, right? Things that are beyond what you would expect and how things can change. Are those actually in individual player contracts as well? Do you know?
No, the individual contract is actually standard. Used to be all kinds of addendums to it. But this one here is quite simply, it's a signing bonus that was going to be paid out and protected regardless of a lockout. So it's not written into it. It's just that if there was to be a lockout, all bonuses have to be paid, just as all injured players have to be paid too. So, it's like I say, but now how would you handle that percentage? If you're Austin Matthews and you're getting $15 million on July 1st, how much of a hit do you take on that and how do you end up spreading it out?
Got a text at 12-1200. Good morning, boys. This pandemic has thrown a wrench into my normal daily routine. Tell me something like Rip Van Winkle. Have I slept through the NHL entry draft lottery? Well, you have not, unsigned. In fact, the draft lottery was supposed to be tomorrow night. Of course, it has been postponed. But no, unfortunately, I think a lot of us wake up in the morning going, or even in the middle of your day, you're going, as you're thinking about what you would do kind of normally, I still catch myself, and it's been a month now, still catch myself going, nope, I can't do that. Like, just normal, going to the grocery store, kind of going in and out, no, it's an entire thing now, or, you know what, I'm lining up outside, and I'm going in with a list, and I'm wearing gloves. and everybody's got you know, face masks on now or whatever. Like, so every once in a while, I don't know what anybody else is like, but I just catch myself with, okay, I'm gonna life is not the same right now.
No, it's not. And the draft lottery, positive for the Sens fans out there. I don't think there's going to be anything crazy as far as all 31 teams in the lottery. My feeling is that the season will not be finished. You'll go right to a playoff, and maybe they have all 15 in. Maybe they expand the playoffs, but probably you'll have the same draft lottery. So I think that's a positive. But these conversations, and I'm just thinking of the Ottawa Senators. Like, if you're Thomas Chabot and you just signed for 8x8, you're thrilled. But in the economics of a league, and if you have a rollback all of a sudden that, again, is 25%, I've now turned into a $6 million player. If I'm Brady Tkachuk and I'm going into next year, well, when I come out of this and all of a sudden I still want my $7 or $8 million, I know the cap has shifted a little bit. Like the, how this is going to be pressured to each player, right, is really an interesting conversation. Just like, again, I always say Darcy Tucker, we signed in Toronto back in the day, signed a three-year deal, was only $2 million a year, but for him that was a lot of money. By the time he missed a year and they rolled back the salaries, he had lost half of that money.
Wow.
So the effects on each individual will be quite interesting as well.
Right. Let's see here. Unsigned writes, we all know people that after every work stoppage, some will quit going to games in every sport. Methinks the same will hold true for some of the franchises that just won't be able to give free or discounted tickets, including here in Ottawa. That comes from Unsigned. And that's what we talked about. The economics in every sport and within every market in every sport are going to be different. And so, you know, if we, again, use the NHL as an example, I don't know that you can have this, we know where Gary Bettman in the league says on high, tickets to all games for the first month of the next season are going to be free.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right? Because the economics are so different in every market.
It is. Also, what you don't want is that, and this is a bit of pressure from the league, they don't want a feeling of, well, I just went to that playoff game and all the fans there went there for $10. And there's the Boston Bruins fans. You know, Jacobs isn't going to give you a dime off of the ticket price. So you're trying to balance that as a league as well. And when you get into economics, the lockout's different because the lockouts, you just piss people off. Now we're just talking about, do people simply have the money to go? And when Pierre McGuire was on, he touched on, nobody thought there was going to be a hot spot down in Georgia. Yeah, nobody thought that the governor would have a presser last week saying he had no idea that this was actually contagious. So anyways, wanted to get that point out of the way. But but the economics for each city, and yeah, I mean, hey, this is, like I said, I don't know what this is, a Great Depression, right? I mean, what the heck? And to a lot of people, and we're only having this conversation because we're on sports radio. Yeah, for a lot of people right now, for God's sakes, it's probably the last thing on your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, 844, one thing we know is going to happen because the NFL insists on it. The business of the National Football League will continue. The next thing on the agenda is the draft that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And tell you what, boy, I've never seen more draft previews, more mock drafts in my life than what are going on right now, which, again, it helps pass the time of day. Not sure they're worth a whole heck of a lot at the end of the day. But when the draft happens, as we heard officially now from the NFL on Monday and Roger Goodell, it is going to be a virtual draft. In fact, general managers have been told, you know, you can't rent. I know, I think it was the Saints that talked about renting a hotel ballroom. So, you know, because of physical distancing, we'll rent a huge ballroom so we can have our 10 to 12 people out there, from the GM to the player personnel guy to the scouts and the owner or whatever. And we'll keep our 6 feet apart, but we'll all be in the same room. NFL said that's not happening. If you're a general manager, you got to be in your house, or in an apartment or whatever, if you don't want your family to be around. But
the Saints coach just got over the virus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, of all the teams, to use an example, yeah, Sean Payton. But now this whole idea now of, okay, so we're all going to be isolated, including team, you know, scouts and general managers from each other. So as we try to conduct the business of a draft, and you went through 20 of them or whatever as an assistant general manager, from trade proposals to, you know, who's going to be our pick when it's our turn, to everything. Like, everything is now, this is the first time we've ever seen that. The issue of security, you know, we saw it. Everybody was using Zoom, right? Zoom was the big thing, the flavor of the day for the first couple of weeks when we were all in isolation. And then last week it was, story started to surface that, well, this thing isn't very secure at all. People are hacking into it or whatever. So what is the NFL going to use in the short term to make, you know, team officials, coaches, general managers feel secure about what they're talking about online amongst themselves? Here's John Harbaugh, the coach of the Baltimore Ravens, on that.
My level of involvement has been, every time I read something like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times that talks about how messed up Zoom is, or some of these other deals, like we came out this morning, I immediately texted to our IT people. And Nick Matteo is one of those guys. And they assure me that we are doing everything humanly possible. And I remind them that that's what Wells Fargo and all those other places said about our private information. So I've got some real concerns about that. And hopefully we'll be okay.
There you go.
Kind of like that, you know. We'll see what happens. I really wouldn't want the opposing coaches to have our playbook or our draft meetings. That would be preferable.
There you go. So light comment there. But oh, you know, listen, football more than any. They're so paranoid, right? So paranoid about people stealing. He said, as he talked about there, and I think joking in a joking manner about plays, but just draft strategy, trades they're talking about. All of that stuff is right now. Maybe IT guy, the IT guy at various teams. May become the new MVP.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also seeing Robert Kraft, what he did for the country, and also the fact that he owns Zoom. I mean, as a Patriots fan, that makes me feel better.
Nice.
No, but here's the thing, and I understand what Harbaugh's saying. One of the references was made was the St. Louis Cardinals employee hacking into the Houston Astros, of all people's scouting program. When they found that out, he's banned for life from baseball. If a team wants to hack into your scouting system, well, they could have done that a long time ago. The idea that when you're having the Zoom call, and because this is also time sensitive as you get to the draft, when you're going to make your pick, like we're talking about 5 minutes between that's an awful lot of paranoia. And again, if teams want to, in the National Hockey League, the RinkNet system out of Kitchener is used by at least 25 of the NHL teams. 25. And I often had always thought that back in the day, because the Lou Lamorellos, of course, and a few other teams would never use it. If you had the ability to hack into their computer, you would have information on 25 NHL teams.
Right.
And so, like I said, I understand what he's saying, but come on. And then there were people talking about, well, what if the internet drops out? It's like, listen, you just have to go up and make a pick. I mean, use your phone. I think Michael Wilbon said it best. You have a cell phone. You can end up using that. So I know what everyone's saying, but, and also, is there, and I know the Patriots, this will be the fun part, like, could there be anything in more poor taste right now than hacking into another sports
team
system?
Well, I don't think that anybody's referring to teams hacking into other teams.
Okay.
I think they're
just
talking
the
about
people.
Just, I don't know, guys sitting, hey, listen,
people that are bored.
If Russians can hack into and into Facebook and create election chaos, I think that's what they're referring to.
But my point is that every team has a software system that they do all of their scouting on. Every single scouting report, every single analysis, I'm assuming Coach Harbaugh, when he has his playbook, is printed off of a computer. Like, people's ability to want to try to do something like, now they have more free time on their hands, but that has to, the IT point to what you're saying, that risk, I'm sure teams have looked at for a long time, that we want to make sure that, first of all, you hear those great stories about a guy leaving his draft book in a taxi or leaving his draft list, right? So, no, hey, I think this has to be a fear for teams, but it's also very important to protect your information, even if somebody didn't want it, just a chance to embarrass you, right? That's probably what would fear most general managers.
All right, so everything is going to be done virtually, which means the way that we watch it when we watch it on television later this month, it's all going to be, it's going to be unlike what we've seen before, right? Typically, everybody's in the same, and they've made this into a traveling circus now, right? It's been to Dallas and Philadelphia. This year it was supposed to be in Vegas, and they're actually going to be carting the draft picks was it the Bellagio that's got the big fountains out? I don't remember which hotel it was going to be at, but they're going to take the guy when he was drafted and bring him across the fountains by boat to the stage, which was, and it was going to be so elaborate, so Vegas at the end of the day.
Yeah,
that's, you know, none of that is going to be happening now.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have a guy who, I'm assuming, a player when he's picked, is going to be sitting on his couch, physically distanced from his parents and his siblings and his girlfriend and whomever, going to get chosen by FaceTime. We're going to see his reaction. So, Cool Media has come out with some betting lines for the NFL draft.
Because we need something to gamble on.
Yeah, that's right. For the gambling degenerates, as in this one, who will the number one overall pick hug first? Mom, dad, girlfriend, friend, or sibling? You have five options on that one. So I would think that comes down to mom or girlfriend, does it not?
Yeah, and in this case, that could be the time where, was it Clowney that had the fictitious girlfriend?
No, that was Manti Te'o.
Oh, Manti Te'o. Yeah.
He was not the first pick overall.
Here's with these draft parties. It'll be, hey, everyone leave the room. Go hide. Pretend you're not here. And then what's it going to be like when you're the first pick and you're soon to be a multimillionaire? How many people are going to want to come over to your house? And I got to be honest with you, from a draft coverage standpoint, the way the NFL does it, when there's a draft pick made, the less I can see of him with his friends and family and going up and putting on a hat and shaking the commissioner's hand, but I could go into the studio where they've got incredible coverage and footage of each player, I actually think this will be tremendous. The NHL draft and the painful thought of sitting through this crap when they get on and thank their fans at the draft party and 3,000 people are on stage to bring the guy up. That's not what I want as a sports fan at all. I actually think this will be terrific for the NFL.
Yeah, I don't mind. You know what? First of all, the guys, especially the first round picks, right? They all have elaborate suits on, which are crazy. I mean, they almost try to top each other with how crazy the suits are.
Yeah.
They always hug it out with Raj on stage, right? So you can give out the biggest hug. They put on the usually terrible looking draft hat. Or whatever.
I'll kind of
miss that part of it a little bit. Yeah. It won't be. Well, but I love seeing the reaction.
Yeah.
And whether it be on your living room couch or, you know, in years past where they were sitting at a table in the green room, that reaction when you're actually picked and you have come from wherever you have come from and you have fulfilled your dream and you're going to be paid untold riches and you have made it. That those instant reactions are still something that I love to see.
No, and great point. And also to the NBA and the NFL, there isn't the same production, right? It is the commissioner up there. It isn't the repetitive speech of thanking the city and the draft party. And also, and from the NHL, I will say, you're agreeing with you, it's fun to see young kids in the stands with their family and, you know, where, hey, you get drafted. Or, you know, in the case of the pressure points, and it feels like it's more the NFL or the NBA, that one fella, I guess Rodgers being the great example, the one guy that starts to slide, then all of a sudden you just feel like the world has ended for the poor fella.
Oh,
then
goodness.
You realize he's still a first round pick, right? So that those parts, I you're right, and they do smooth street. I just think for the NHL, it's a lot, and all you really want for most so is just who's your team's pick, where the other one has a lot more interest.
Will any first round draft picks put on the wrong team hat? Yes or no? I'm sure they'll have a fine collection, right? I wonder
if they have a hat ready.
I wonder if the NFL will ship all.
Well,
I don't know. If there's maybe 60 guys that are prospective potential first round picks. Are they going to ship all 60, all 32 team hats?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Hey, that makes sense. Hey, or not that it would have to be. That's some of the fun of when the kids declare what school they're going to go to, right? In the United States, and they have three or four hats sitting there, and they end up putting one on. So I think there's something you can end up doing.
With Instagram and Facebook Live, you know, you've got all these different filters that you can add on, funny masks or hat. Maybe that's what the NFL Network will do, and it'll be just superimposed. You just have to sit still.
Snapchat filters.
A little Snapchat.
Oh, you can have have them in uniform within 10 minutes.
Heck yeah.
Tom Brady was a Buccaneer within 2 minutes of him signing.
By the way, can I just to go off the page here for a second? The Buccaneers rolled out their new unis yesterday, which are they pretty much the same uniforms they had before?
Yeah,
I think everybody was hoping for the old creamsicle,
the
orange ones, and they rolled back with the ones from the glory years when they won the Super Bowl back in the early 2000s. I mean, they
changed the numbers, which I know you'd like, right?
The font of the computer numbers were terrible. So they've changed the font. They're very simple and they're nice. If they were a first of, they've rolled them out. They're very simple, but I'll say it was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
It was. I guess after the hype of Brady, somebody thought, oh, within a week you could actually change your uniform. I mean, this comes years year in advance. Also, King Kong Bunda had pointed out yesterday, which I had no idea, and it had me looking like the NFL. I know I asked you again yesterday, but for Tom Brady, does Tom Brady for all 16 games of the NFL wear the same helmet for all 16 games?
Are you talking about like he has one helmet
No, one helmet.
I'm not sure. Okay. I know they have a one helmet rule, but I think that's just the design.
The design of it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know. I really kind of had this idea that they had a home and an away helmet. I had never really paid attention because certainly when the Pats, they always have some different logos that I guess the trainers are turning over from game to game or week to week.
All right. Back to some betting lines put on the first round of the NFL draft. Total number of dogs shown during the first round of the draft. The over-under is 3.5. Total number of dogs. Now, one guy could have three dogs, right?
Yeah, and you're done.
So 3.5. You taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over on this one for sure. Oh, yeah. The family pet's going to be there.
Because there's cats, too. Cat. No. The line on cats is half.
Oh.
Only half a cat. You going over or under?
Cats won't be there. It'll be too big of a crowd. The cat's got to leave and go and sleep underneath somebody's bed. The cat won't be there.
Yeah, there'd be too much of a feeling to be in Mr. Wiggles, so I don't see that. the dog part, and we think of all these crazy conferences, and this has happened before the virus, right? How many times are people doing live broadcasts from home when people walk in? Or you had the English one where the daughter comes in.
Well, there's a great one yesterday
to be all serious.
With Glenn McGregor on, who's CTV Parliament Hill reporter, and he's with Lisa LaFlemme. This is either before or after Justin Trudeau came out for his daily thing. This is on CTV News Channel, and the cat comes and jumps on his lap.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Yeah. Dogs, I'm going to go under, actually.
Really?
I just feel like I think the players, first of all, if you're sitting in this room by yourself, you're so nervous and wanting to control the environment. Yeah, I don't.
Are you not having the dog on your lap to provide you comfort since you can't have your girlfriend or your mother?
Yeah, that's a real good, that's a good question. I'm feeling as a young athlete that's about to be drafted that you're just in that room by yourself. I'm going to go under anyway.
Okay. All right. I think I'm going to go over. I think the pets provide comfort.
Oh, they do.
I'm
going to
go over on the dogs and I'm going to go over on the cat.
Okay.
Cats as well. I'm going all pet. I'm going bird. I think we'll see a bird. I think we will see a bird. Now, it might be in a cage in the background, or maybe it's propped up on somebody's shoulder, like a parrot
on
a shoulder.
That's only if you're staying at grandma's house.
Or if you're drafted by the Bucks, right?
Yeah.
You show the fans how much you love it.
That would be awesome.
But you could also superimpose that hammer, right?
Yes, you could.
Jib's dad texts in and says, I'm just wondering if someone or some company is going to create some type of virtual booing. You know, everybody wants to see Roger Goodell booed. Yeah. Well, maybe they could work that into some of the ESPN or NFL Network coverage. That'd be good.
Well, and it also has to be for the athletes. And I mean, think about last year when the Giants ended up taking the quarterback. I mean, the reception he got for taking him, ahead of Haskins?
Ahead of a lot of people. Yeah, at six overall, he was thought to be too high.
Like of all the things to happen for a young athlete on your draft day, to be getting booed. We've seen at the NBA where it feels like it's almost gang warfare, right? Where you got the group of people that are, dressed up as their team, and the look on their face expression when they don't make the pick that the so-called experts in the stands think you should be making.
Kind of like Sens' reaction, Sens fans' reaction after Brady Tkachuk. If there was an actual viewing party and we've seen the reaction of people.
Yeah.
Now the reaction today will be a lot different, but that night, if you remember the feedback for the most part,
very much
not
so.
Very good.
Yeah, no, for sure.
All right, we'll look forward to NFL draft coming up. It actually starts 2 weeks from tomorrow, and we'll have full coverage right here on TSN 1200. We'll take a break at 8:58. We're going to talk more football. Henry Burris will join us after 9. CFL announced yesterday, no big surprise given what's going on here in Canada and the restrictions as far as Americans coming to play in Canada. No games, nothing going on before July 1st at the very earliest. What does it all mean going forward for the CFL? And we'll talk a little NFL draft with Hank as well when he joins us after a top of the hour news update, which is coming up next right here on TSN 1200.